This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 115, where we're going to talk to Ross Gardler about Azure Container Service, recorded live February 19th, 2016.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
What's up, AC?
Haha, man, I'm doing pretty good. Yourself?
Oh, I'm whacked. I just got back from a family vacay to Disneyland.
Had a lot of fun with the general public.
Oh, my goodness. It was awesome. The kids totally loved it, so it's mission accomplished. But holy smoke, I'm tired. Just the amount of effort required into stopping your children from getting lost or trying to kill themselves is high.
Without trying to keep them attached to you on those little leashes.
Oh yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, but it's tough. But it was awesome. They had a blast, and we got a lot of rides in, so it was a great time. How about you?
I'm still a bit pumped up. Last weekend I ran a half marathon. I've been battling through an injury for the last 7-8 weeks where I think I've done something to my it's called the adductor muscle and the psoas. It's based, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a muscle that kind of...
Did you just swear at me?
No, I did not swear. I would want the way it feels at times, yes. It's a muscle that kind of goes from the inside of your leg, in the inside of your hip, down around the inside of your leg, attaching to like the outside of your knee, or attaching to close to your knee. And then your psoas is something that's kind of attached up inside like your rib cage, down, well, near up in your rib cage area. And then it goes all the way down to the top of your leg. And it's about like there's a part of it that's about the size of your fist. I mean, it's a big muscle. I hurt both of them about 7-8 weeks ago. And last weekend I was doing everything I could to nurse them along. And last weekend, last Sunday, I ran a half marathon and set a personal record, a PR, out of the blue. I cannot believe I did it. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, congratulations, man. That's awesome. Not on the injury.
No.
I mean, on the race. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is that the injury only hurts when I'm not running. I hurt when I was running. It doesn't hurt when I'm running. So when I ran, I was fine. But after the run, I was in a lot of pain. So I had a deep tissue sports massage today, which is... the output of it is great, but the actual process of having it done is incredibly painful.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, that's no good. Well, hopefully speedy recovery.
Yeah, I need it. So, hey, what are we doing today?
Hey, before we get into the meat and potatoes, I have one thing to talk to you about that I think you'll totally love, and hopefully a few of our listeners will as well.
Pulling a Steve Jobs, just one more thing.
Exactly. Hey, I'm going to let you talk in a minute, but before that, so a friend of mine sent me a link to a GitHub repo. It's called himawari.js, himawari.js. And it's a guy who's made basically a node module that lets you download in real time images from the Himawari 8 geostationary weather satellite deployed by Japan.
I've seen this. This is badass.
And there's actually... It's actually inspired by a guy who wrote a PowerShell script to do the same sorts of things. But you can go use NPM to install this stuff and pull down about an image every 10 minutes or so, I think the satellite takes, and sends it down, and it's all open and you can go get the imagery. And it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty sweet.
So the next thing to do is to use this to go download an image every once every 10 minutes and then automatically, magically update your background on your desktop and get real-time Earth imagery on your desktop. How cool would that be?
That's pretty cool. That's very cool. I saw where they could do, you could grab the high-res images, and it looks like you can also pull down images that are infrared because it looks like you can see Earth like in all black but with just the clouds.
Yeah, there's some settings you can do around things like zoom and the infrared option and stuff like that. So that's pretty sweet.
Very cool. Very cool. I saw that one come across the other day. That's a fun one.
Hey, so meat and potatoes of the show. We have got Ross Gardler, who we managed to interview about an upcoming new service in Azure called the Azure Container Service. And we'll let Ross talk about what this is about in more detail in just a second. But this is something that I've been on the preview for a few weeks. I haven't managed to get a good chance to play around with it, but obviously with our interest in Docker, this is a really interesting new service coming from Azure. And Ross reached out actually to us and said, hey, I'd love to talk to you more about ACS. Mm. And so we invited him on the show, and he was very, you know, gracious enough to spend the time to come and talk to us about this. So it's going to be a really interesting talk, and I hope people get or take a lot away from this who are interested in Docker, interested in cloud hosting, interested in what people are doing in Azure, and learn a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I've been looking forward to this. It was kind of funny because I think I mentioned that, you know, I wanted to get him on the show, and he actually heard that episode when I said that and then reached out about 3 or 4 days after it came out on Twitter. So it's kind of a surprise when he reached out. It's like, absolutely, we want to get you on. So yeah, this year is going to be really interesting. I mean, I'm not the one saying this. I'm kind of repeating what I've heard from other people, but in this whole container space and Docker space, everyone is really talking about how 2016 is like the year of Docker or the year of containers, that we're really going to see a lot more. While we have seen it explode over the last year or two, we should see it really kind of stick its teeth into a lot of places and see a lot of organizations like Azure, like Google, like AWS offer some really sophisticated and cloud as a service, or sorry, container as a service, cloud as a service. Yeah, I'd like to have that cloud as a infrastructure, please.
That's the next level of abstraction.
Have the container as a service model available for people instead of them, you know, today having to spin up the host that are going to run all the different containers. So, yeah. So I guess why don't we, instead of spending too much time here, why don't we let Ross kind of dive in and have a chat with him?
It's rock and roll. All right. Well, welcome, Ross. Ross is a senior program manager at Microsoft in the Azure Compute team who focuses on Linux and open source mainly. So welcome, Ross, to the show.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Great to be here.
I think you might be our first guest who has their own Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I when I introduce myself at conferences, I say just do a web search. You'll find out far more than you possibly want to know.
I did a similar thing this morning and found that you used to be a manager and sound engineer for a band or something like that in Manchester.
You've been digging. Yes, that's right. Manchester in the UK. Yeah, that was my first career. It was a fun time. I was a lot younger those last days.
So a sound engineer, you moved to Trinidad and Tobago. You went and worked for OSS Watch, from what I understand, then joined Microsoft in 2013.
Yeah, that's right. So as a in IT, I've been a consultant all my life, and those things that you're talking about were part of that those roles.
Excellent. So what is it? What do you do on a, you know, from a, how would you describe your job at Microsoft, the group that you're in, and kinds of things you work on?
Well, I joined Microsoft 3 years ago, and I joined Microsoft because of my experience in open source, my background in open source. One of the things you didn't mention in the intro there was the fact that I'm very heavily involved and have been for many years in open source. Specifically, I do a lot of work in the Apache Software Foundation. I've had many roles over there. I'm currently the president of the foundation there. And I joined Microsoft specifically because of that expertise 3 years ago to help the company with its now widely known move towards supporting open source. I now work specifically on Docker-related technology, and one of the things I work on is the Azure Container Service.
Excellent. Yeah, I guess moving to Microsoft at such a time would have been kind of an interesting transition, if not just for yourself, but for those who you've spent, you know, many years working with in the open source world. And so how did that come about, and what motivated you to join the, what I guess some of your colleagues, if they would have called at some time, the Borg?
Yeah, that exact name was used at times. So it was a huge change from a career point of view. Obviously, it was a huge change. It was also a huge change in that I moved my family, my wife and 2 children, over from the UK to the US. Mm. In order to take the role, I felt that if I was going to do it, I needed to be right here in Corp, where right at the center, rather than working from a remote office. And the motivation really was that I've been watching Microsoft for quite some time, as anybody in IT does, look at what Microsoft is doing. And it became apparent to anybody who was looking closely enough that the attitude towards open source and the understanding of Microsoft's place in open source was changing. And, you know, one of the key things that happened there is one of my Apache colleagues, a guy called Gianugo Rabellino, he moved to Microsoft 2 years before me. And I found that for 2 years, whenever I was within 100 miles of this guy, he would make sure he came and have a coffee with me. And would tell me all the wonderful things that were happening and all the changes that were coming and all that. And eventually, long story short, this turned into a conversation about me working here. And the reason I came here is because as an individual consultant, I was able to have a lot of impact in the open source space. I was working on some exciting stuff, but it was still just me and my business partner as consultants. Coming to Microsoft, there is an untold number of fantastic engineers that work here who are now working with me and with many other people across the company on open source stuff. And that was an opportunity not to be turned down.
Yeah, I think we've seen an extreme change in Microsoft over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, so to speak, and of their approach to open source and willingness to participate. And it's fantastic to see, and it's benefiting. You know, I've built at both AC and I have built a career on Microsoft technologies, and now has never been a better time as a developer in the Microsoft world to be able to participate and benefit from the things Microsoft are doing in the open source world. So, you know, from the outside world, it's a brilliant time.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, and that change has been happening for a long time. It's just really gathering pace now.
Right. And that seems to be very apparent, not only through, you know, the press and things, but developers' attitudes to Microsoft has changed in the last couple of years as well. And I think that's very telling.
Yeah.
So what does that translate to in your day-to-day role? You're working on Docker technologies and things, but more specifically, some of our listeners have probably heard us mention you in the past or have read blog posts or Channel 9 videos from you about this thing called ACS. So what is that project all about, and what are you specifically working on that?
So ACS is the Azure Container Service, and what it's all about is providing a way of running containers in a production enterprise environment. And of course, as everybody will know, knows anything about Docker, it's all very well running a Docker run command, but it's not about running individual containers and doing things like that. It's about running whole applications built of many, many different containers. They need to be geographically distributed in many situations. You need high availability, et cetera, et cetera. And it gets really complex. And so that's where Docker Swarm comes in. If you're in the Docker ecosystem entirely, that's the kind of thing that Docker Swarm helps with. So ACS has a mode, which is Docker Swarm. And we also have another mode, which is Apache Mesos. And the reason we have that one is because Mesos is, although it's not Docker native, it's been around a lot longer than Docker, even Docker, let alone Docker Swarm, and does support Docker containers very, very well. And it is proven in production. It is enterprise ready. And so we have two types of customers, those who want to be Docker native, Docker stack from top to bottom, Docker Swarm for that, and those who want a little bit more of history in the software that they're running, and that's the Apache Mesos. And of course, there's a whole load of other tools in there that bring this together to provide a fully open source based container service.
Gotcha. So somebody approaching this for the first time with Azure, you know, in the past I've looked at, you know, running some Docker nodes in Azure and spinning up a virtual machine and doing all the manual configuration and things like that. So what is it that ACS kind of adds as a layer over the top of all those kinds of things that people may have been playing around with manually or tried to provision manually in the past?
The simplest way of putting it is if you are going to take all of the components that you need to run, say, an Apache Mesos service in high availability with multiple masters and failover and all of those kinds of things, and then optimize the configuration for the environment that you're running in. And, you know, it's open source. It's not opinionated about the hardware, but it does need some tweaking and configuring and love and care to make it perform optimally.
I see.
If you do all that, it's a lot of work. You need to know what you're doing. And it's literally thousands of lines of configuration code. Something in the region of 4,000 to 5,000 lines of configuration code is what you get out at the end of that. So what Azure Container Service does is it takes all of that expertise. We partner with both Docker and Mesosphere on this. It takes all of that expertise, our own expertise on running Azure, and we do all that work for you, and we provide an Azure Resource Manager resource provider. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with that. We can dig into it if we need to. But it basically means those many thousands of lines of code become just tens of lines of code for the customer.
I see. So it hides or helps you provision and hide a lot of the complexity behind what you'd have to manually configure with either, say, through an ARM template or a bunch of configuration with ARM templates, or do manually yourselves over you know, many hours in a non-repeatable fashion. So it's the idea that somebody could come along and say, hey, I just want a new cluster running in Azure, give it some configuration variables and kind of hit the rubber stamp me out a cluster button and get one of these things up and running in a matter of minutes.
That's exactly it. It's all ARM driven. The configuration you must do in order to do it is you give it a DNS name so that you can refer to all the various endpoints. You give it the number of masters you want, either 1, 3, or 5, depending on what level of availability you want. 1 is a kick in the tires. Don't really mind too much if it goes down. 3 is kind of minimally highly available. And then 5, of course, is more available. How many agents you want in there? So how many machines you're going to run containers on? An SSH key, so you can communicate securely with the endpoints on there. And that's it. You hit go, where hitting go could be clicking a button in the portal. It can be the command line tools, anything that supports ARM templates, any approach like that. There are quick start templates in GitHub for you to get started from. Mm. And then once it's done its job and all that infrastructure is stood up, all of the software configuration is done for you. And all you need to do then is start using the Docker command line tools if you're using the Swarm the Swarm cluster, or the Marathon API, which is a framework that sits on top of Mesos. And you use whatever open source tooling or even proprietary tooling that you've built yourself, which is we see quite a lot, that talks to those standard APIs that are provided by your chosen orchestrator in the frameworks.
Gotcha. Right. So it should be fairly straightforward for somebody to stamp one of these things out and get up and running. I know that when I was playing around with manually provisioning virtual machines and trying to get a Swarm cluster up and running, there was a lot of fiddliness to getting that going manually for the first time. And so this sounds like a really great approach for somebody who's not just wanting to run it in production, obviously, but also just wanting to stand one of these things up and play around with it in a Azure development environment of some description.
Absolutely.
To get the containers up and running.
I mean, that's our goal. You do, once they're stood up, you're still able to access the individual resources within there. So you can still get access to the individual virtual machines, to the individual NICs, and to all that kind of thing. So if you want to do some further tweaking for a specific use case, all the software you're using to drive it is open source, and all the machines are available to you as just normal Azure resources. So you can use it to stand up quickly, kick the tires and so on, or you can use it to stand up quickly and then further optimize for specific use cases.
Gotcha. So once you've created one of these things, what's the process of changing it? So for example, I want to add some more nodes to my cluster or tweak the configuration a little bit. Is there something in the Azure portal that people will see where they can go in and start, you know, much like resizing a virtual machine or adding more in a Azure website, for example, scaling things up? Is it as simple as that through ACS or is that really a going back to the template and tweaking it and redeploying your cluster again?
We're currently in public preview. We went public preview in the middle of February. And today in the preview, we don't have good integration with the portal, for example, to do that kind of work. So it is going back to the template, although we are built on top of virtual machine scale sets. So if you need more machines in your agent cluster, then you can use the scaling capabilities of virtual machine scale sets to do that for you. So that gives you some level of auto scale. You can also do it manually the way you described, redeploying a template and increasing the number of nodes, etc.
Gotcha. So the idea here would be your target customer is an enterprise that wants to run their applications or their Dockerized apps, so to speak, up in Azure and get a cluster all up and running and then deploy their apps. Do you have ambitions at some point in the future to do something like container as a service, where it's literally, I just need a whole bunch of resources and you keep throwing containers at it until it runs out and then you buy some more resources without having to think about the, or even be aware of the underlying infrastructure that's powering your cluster, I guess?
It's difficult to answer that question. It's difficult for two reasons. The first reason is, what are we going to do in the future? Well, we're talking about the future, and the future always changes. So we're always very cautious about saying, yes, we're going to do that. But we do get customers asking for that kind of managed service that you're describing. And it's entirely possible. Sorry?
Sign me up.
Excellent. And I see Andrew is also raising his hand there. So, okay, two customers. Yes, we'll do it. We do what the customer needs. And we do feel that customers need that. But what would that look like? And you know, the container space is full of innovation right now. There's an awful lot of innovation going on. And also, there's not a huge amount of maturity. A lot of the technology is very, very young. And it's not clear what customers actually need when they move to production in 12 months' time, because it's not clear what technologies are going to be front runners in 12 months' time. And so our approach here with the container service is to build a really rock solid framework on top of which we can work with the communities. And as I mentioned, we have partnerships with Mesosphere and Docker. What those partnerships result in is code in the open source projects. And we're contributing directly to those projects. We're engaging with the community where the innovation is happening, and we're learning from the community to make sure we can bring it to the container service. So I suspect the answer is yes. I'm not going to give an answer of yes, though, because I don't know what that would look like at this point. We're still pretty much in listening mode, making sure we've got that base infrastructure in place, and we'll build on top of that as the sector sort of solidifies around specific technologies, as we have done around Docker containers as being the way of packaging these containers, for example.
Yeah, and I think that obviously makes a whole ton of sense. Is get really great at running these things, and then start layering on top useful services and other types of facilities that customers might want later on. Which actually, you know, brings me to an interesting topic about how much Docker is going on Azure today, and is it a really popular thing that you're seeing people doing, lots of repeatable patterns that sort of led you to this point to say, hey, we really need a first-class citizen to be able to run these things in Azure, rather than having to have customers go through and, you know, manually do it themselves or, you know, some other sorts of things like that. So yeah, how's Docker in Azure today? And it's obviously popular enough that you're doing this. So I'd love for you to dive in a little bit on that and let us know, or at least our listeners know, what people are doing with Docker on Azure today.
It's hard to answer that because, of course, when people stand up a VM on Azure, we don't actually know what they're doing with that VM. So it's very difficult to answer that. I can answer from my experience of talking to customers and understanding what you know, hands-on with what they're doing. And also our own internal use. We use it a lot internally. And I would say that the most common use case today is dev and test. This is by far, that's what the majority of people are doing. They're understanding how to utilize this very new, very rapid way of standing up machines and sharing objects across different development teams and so on. So that's very, very common. We're seeing a reasonable amount of use cases where people are standing up particular application stacks as containers on VMs. So, for example, just to pick a random example, not that this is necessarily a popular one, I don't have the data to be sure, but for example, something like WordPress, which requires WordPress, it needs some plugins built in there, it needs some MySQL stuff, and so on. And people are seeming to stand up just single VMs sometimes, with containers on there that gives them the full stack for that particular thing. So that's more of a traditional VM usage where they're using containers as a convenience to deploy the application. And then increasingly, and why we've decided to provide the container service at this point, is we're seeing people starting to look at containers as a way of responding to the need to do rapid scale up, scale down, and to do microservice style architectures. So, you know, they're bringing more agility that you hear from the dev test phases. People are getting much closer to wanting to run those kind of workloads in production. And those customers are the ones who want it as easy as possible to stand up a cluster and just deploy their application to it, because they're doing it in dev test already. And so they just want to move that dev test into production at this point. And that's what the container service is really focusing on. It's useful in dev test as well, of course, and we will take those workloads. But, you know, that could be done on individual machines and so on. And you don't need large-scale, highly redundant, and highly available, rather, clusters in order to do that.
Gotcha. So this is, you know, AC and I have been huge proponents of PaaS, you know, platform as a service in the past. And to us, it feels like Docker is very attractive because it's not really PaaS, but it's not really IaaS as well. And so do you think that, at least to me, it feels like this is kind of a halfway point between what people are used to in with IaaS, with full control over the underlying infrastructure, either on premises with, you know, physical tin, or in Azure, where it's VMs as a service and that sort of thing. And then, but not going the full whole hog towards platform as a service, where you lose a lot more of the control about what's running it under the hood. And to me, this feels kind of like a halfway point between the two. Do you think there's something to that, and why people are more attracted to Docker than they were to Azure PaaS, say 5 years ago, when PaaS really started sort of ahead of the game, so to speak, in the cloud world?
Yeah, I do think there's some truth in that. In fact, in one of my sort of standard decks that I use, I have a slide that covers this very topic. And so I talk about a spectrum between what your operations team need and what your development team need. Mm. And over there on the operations side, you start on the least PaaS, the most IaaS end of things. And there, over on that end, you've got your virtual machines. So you're looking after individual virtual machines, and you're caring for those as something that needs love and attention. And if it goes down, it's a real problem. And then if you move along the spectrum one step towards PaaS, you come to virtual machine scale sets. And this is, okay, they're still virtual machines, but I don't really care about the individual one. I'm just saying I need so many of this type of machine. And as long as I've got that many, I don't really care anything else about them. And then one step further towards PaaS is where I see Azure Container Service. For the reasons you've said, we care even less about the underlying infrastructure at this point, and we care more about how do we deploy our containerized application and have that managed in a sensible way. Mm. And that's where I see Container Service. And then to the right of that, you start to have the sort of PaaS V2 type solutions, things like Cloud Foundry and Service Fabric and things like that.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that's it's a spectrum that I think a lot of people struggle with. The IT guys are really comfortable with, tin on premises, so to speak, in their closet or their data center or whatever they have, and the devs are really keen to take all of that abstraction away and make their lives a whole lot simpler. And so I think people are feeling more and more comfortable taking a step back from just pure virtual machines and taking it the next sort of step up. And maybe one day Ray Aussie will be proven correct, and Azure PaaS we'll all be looking back at Docker and being like, wow, that was way too close to the tin for my liking.
Well, like I said, we don't know what the future looks like right now.
Exactly. I think he's probably a little bit too far ahead of his time there, but we'll see. I guess the history will tell us one day. So how does this, AC phoned in a question from being on mute over there. It has a question about how this sort of compares and contrasts to Service Fabric and what you can do with those technologies.
The answer to that is really an extension of what we've just been talking about, that Service Fabric is much more over there at the developer end of things. So I like to make the distinction by drawing three lines, and you can't see what I'm doing. I'm waving my hands around. But if you draw three vertical lines, or rather two lines, so you've got three sections. Right down at the bottom of that, you've got your infrastructure. It's the thing with electricity running through it. It's the machines that you run stuff on. And for Azure Container Service, that's our data centers. Then the next layer above that, for Azure Container Service, is your orchestration layer. So this is where Swarm and Mesos and things like that fit in. And for a Container Service, we're saying that needs to be entirely open source in order to give people portability at the infrastructure layer. So you can take everything we use in Azure Container Service, and as long as you put the time into configuring it, you can install it on any platform, your laptop, your development cluster, even another cloud if you really wanted to do that. And then the third layer is the application layer. And that's where we stop in Azure Container Service. We don't tell you anything about how you should architect your applications. It's entirely up to you. Just give us your Docker Compose file or your Marathon JSON file, and we'll run it for you. Service Fabric, on the other hand, does reach up into the top layer. So it provides you with orchestration. It provides you with infrastructure management. But it also reaches into the top layer and provides you with a development model, an architectural model that you can write against. And that gives you some advantages. For example, it's very easy to do stateful applications on Service Fabric because they give you these hooks that you can write against, which will manage state for you. Whereas if you're doing that in a Docker world, managing states, it's a bit of a headache. You have to architect it into your application. But because you're free to do anything you want with containers, it's much more flexible as well. And so it's where do you want to be on that spectrum? Do you want your developers to be able to build stuff very, very quickly and very, very easily, but in a very specific way that's defined for you outside of your architectural design? Or do you want full flexibility and you want to, you're happy to take the hit from a speed of development side of things on that in order to get the extra flexibility? So that's one of the main differences. Another big difference, of course, between Service Fabric and Container Service is Service Fabric is Windows first, whereas Azure Container Service is Linux first.
Gotcha. I guess some of our listeners will be aware of some of the work coming in the next version of Windows Server, I believe, around Windows containers and things like that. So I'm assuming that at some point we'll see Windows support and ACS as well as traditional Docker support with Linux containers and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Windows Server 2016 will include Docker containers. We call them Windows Server containers, but it is the same code that you download from GitHub when you download the Docker engine. It's exactly the same code, and you'll see lots of Microsoft engineers contributing to that code base, which is all working towards Windows Server 2016. In fact, we've had Docker support in since TP4 technical preview 4. So you can go to Azure portal today. You can search for Windows Server 2016 with Docker, and you can stand up a VM there. And in answer to your question or your assumption that we will be bringing that into Azure Container Service, yes, of course we will. The goal is that, and I stress this is goal, we don't have this working today, but the goal is that you will decide which is the best platform to run each individual container on. Some things run better on Linux, some things run better on Windows. So you decide which one it is based on that decision. You build your containers, you push them out to the Docker Hub or your private registry. And then when you provide your compose file or your Marathon file, the Azure Container Service is intelligent enough to know, this one's a Windows Server container. I need to deploy it to this pool of agents over here, which are Windows agents. Oh, this one's a Linux one. I need to deploy that over here where the Linux agents are. And the whole thing should be transparent to you.
Gotcha. No, that'll be fantastic, right? Because then you're really, I know a lot of our listeners come from, a Windows and Microsoft stack background. And one of the hurdles they've got to get over with getting into Docker is, it's a Linux world right now for the most part. I think they'll be very keen to see, more of their skills translate into the Docker universe or realm with Windows containers and feel a lot more comfortable with developing in a environment like that. So that'll be very nice to see. So I have a question for you, one of many, of course, but another one. So today at Hyperfish, where I work, we're off building our app in a containerized model and with microservice style architecture and things like that. And we're using what's now called Docker Cloud for deploying those things into a set of Docker nodes running in Azure, of course. And we find it fantastic. They've just gone GA. They help you get your containers up into or your images provisioned and deployed across your nodes, your Docker nodes in Azure and things, or in ACS or in a number of other sort of cloud services and things. Where do you think ACS will land with regards to services like that? It seems to be more configurable and a little lower level than some of those kinds of services. But what do you think the tipping point for a customer would be with ACS versus a sort of a higher level service? At least I think it's a higher level service from something like Tudum or what's now called Docker Cloud.
Yeah, and your observation is right. We're a bit lower level. And our goal is to make sure that all of these technologies that underpin these services, like Docker Cloud, run really, really well on Azure. And that's one of the outputs of us engaging with the community and working on Azure Container Service. And so what we would like to encourage is that partners like Docker and Mesosphere utilize our optimized implementation underneath their higher level management infrastructure that they're creating. And this is one of the reasons why we're absolutely insistent that we don't do anything inside of ACS that is not open source and isn't compliant with the APIs that are provided with the open source projects, because that then enables people to build on top of that and provide those additional layers. And the reason we're doing that, it goes back to the rate of innovation that's happening in this space right now. There really is a lot of innovation. There's a lot of varying approaches to solving the big problems that exist in the container space. It's not clear which is the right approach right now. We need to continue the experiments. We need to continue the innovation that's going on. And our goal with the container service is to provide that that base on which we can continue to support partners building things on top of container service. One really good example of that is the partnership that we have with both Docker and Mesosphere. So we're working directly with those companies. And in Mesosphere's case, they have their DCOS product, which is the higher level stuff. And in Docker's case, they have the UCP product that they're talking about working on at the moment as well. And we hope that we will be the best way of running those things in Azure.
You know, my background is when I worked at Microsoft, I was focused 100% on building a rich partner ecosystem around Office 365, and it all hinges on those folks being able to do exactly what they need and being really open about your APIs and I guess empowering those folks to do really interesting things on top of your platform. And so, yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to see what solutions and what higher level things people build on top of your underlying infrastructure. And then the world is really open for all sorts of interesting scenarios and solutions to be built on top. And also, you know, not just packaged product from other partners, but also from customers wanting to build their own proprietary things as well, and right, feeling like they've got the level of control and things like that that they have in there. That'll be interesting.
It's all the benefits of what I've been doing all my life in IT for 20-odd years in open source. All the same benefits. And you know, one quick observation about the history of Microsoft. Microsoft's not been traditionally an open source company. We talked earlier on about how that's changing very, very rapidly right now. But it's always been a company about that's aimed to empower developers. And I've always seen open source not as a licensing model, but as a development model. And something that empowers developers. The license is very, very important. Of course, that's what protects the development model. But it's really, for me at least, it's the development model that's important. It's the community, it's the sharing, it's the building on top of one another, et cetera. And that's what we're trying to do here with the container service and the focus on Azure. We believe is the best cloud out there. Obviously, I would say that. I work for Microsoft. And I believe it's the best cloud out there. I want it to also be the best place for partners to build their solutions as well as customers.
Yeah, I guess being agnostic about, you know, Microsoft's much happier now about being sort of far more technology agnostic than it ever has been in the past. And so I'm guessing that in ACS, you'll be able to run not only eventually Windows containers, obviously, but also Linux containers, of course, as you do today. Does that mean if I come along with, you know, my favorite Linux distro that you'll support running it in ACS? Or do I have to pick kind of the one that Microsoft chooses is the right one for ACS? Or are you kind of open about that, those sorts of decisions as well?
So we get asked that quite a bit. And our current position on that is, look, you don't care about the VMs. As long as they run your workload, does it matter what the underlying VM is? Mm-hmm. And of course, the promise of Docker is, no, it doesn't matter what the underlying VM is. It's about the container itself. And if you want to run on a flavor other than Ubuntu, which is what we use on the core on our VMs for container service, that's fine. You can run whichever flavor you want inside of your container on top of that. So it shouldn't matter is our response to that. And so, no, we won't support others because we want to optimize. And when you optimize, you want to keep the number of variables as low as possible.
Gotcha.
Will we always be saying it like that? Well, I don't know. We've got to see, you know, as customers do more and more advanced things, we might find a situation where we do need a little bit more flexibility on the underlying OS. But today, there is no plan to provide a different OS.
I think that's very similar, or at least to me, it's very similar to the analogy of building a phone application, right? You build a phone app and you deploy it onto say what you're building for iOS, for example. Apple have very tight control about the software that the app runs on, the underlying operating system and the hardware. But as an app developer, you shouldn't really need to know necessarily about all the ins and outs of all the chips on the phone, just that various OS services and things are available to you. And so I think it's a great, I see it as very similar to that, where you're right, you know, the whole promise of Docker is that you're abstracted to enough of a degree that you shouldn't need to care about that. But people still do today. It's you know, it's weird that, you know, they want to optimize their – there's a lot of discussion about optimizing their Docker images and, you know, taking every sort of utility out that's not needed and getting the skinniest images possible to eke every sort of piece of performance out of them and things like that. But, you know, maybe they'll move on from that discussion once they realize, you know, they should really be focusing on their app and not
– Yeah, maybe. maybe they'll move on, maybe they won't. And you know, we're listening.
Right.
And that's why we're in preview. We don't know all the answers at this point. And we, you know, we're listening to people who feel that our decisions are wrong so that we can correct them before we go to general availability. But, you know, our goal ultimately is if you're using the Swarm flavor and you run Docker Compose against an ACS endpoint, it should behave exactly the same as if you run it against it on your laptop or on your data center where you've deployed Swarm yourself, or even on one of the other competing cloud infrastructure. It should run regardless of where you're taking it. That's our goal.
Yeah, no, excellent. That's it's very empowering for app developers to be able to, you know, run an entire solution or system on their laptop and know that it's very, very close to what production will be. Actually, weirdly, we strike issues where it's not the same, but you know, things like file name case sensitivity between OS X and Ubuntu running on Linux and things like that has struck us a couple of times. So there are some little things that eke through that I'm not sure will get cleaned up or not. But from a developer's point of view, it makes it a whole lot simpler to get up and running in a dev environment knowing that you're very similar to prod or as close as you can, at least anyway.
Yeah, and I think you make an important point, and I don't know about you, but I've been around the IT industry long enough to have heard write once, run anywhere quite a few times and never actually.
I think that seems to have been the thing everybody's been looking for, I think, since the dawn of IT, right?
Yeah.
That was the original promise of Java applets many years ago and things like that, yep, as well. So I guess...
Absolutely.
We keep working towards it. We're definitely taking steps towards it, but just definitely a lot slower than I think everybody was expecting.
That's right.
So you're in preview right now with ACS. What's the plan from here out? You know, when should people expect to, you know, hear news and things like that about ACS? You know, one thing I know we struggle with is the rate of technology change is happening so fast. I really struggle with thinking about, well, are we going to bet on this? Because we've got no idea if it's going to be the thing in, you know, 3 weeks' time, let alone 3 years' time. And, you know, before people take a bet on ACS, they're going to, you know, want to play with it and all that sort of stuff. So why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a feel for where you're at in the process with ACS? You mentioned you're in preview and when people can expect to learn more about it and sort of ACS to go big, so to speak.
Yeah, so I can't give precise dates. You know, think we're in preview. We don't know what we're going to discover during preview. Even just this few days of opening it up public, we've identified a few things that we really need to work on. And so it's a bit of a how long is a piece of string thing. But what I will say is we will definitely move to general availability this year. I believe that given the trajectory we're on and what we want functional by GA, and given the feedback we've had from customers in the private preview, which has been running since December, I feel that we're probably going to be in GA the first half of this year. But you can't hold me to that. It may be as late as the end of the second half of this year. But I'll put my neck out there and say definitely this calendar year.
No, that's great. I think it gives people a sense of that it's worth investing in if they know, you know, give or take 12 months when things are arriving. So they don't want to invest a ton of time in something that's going to keep being pushed out and pushed out and pushed out and pushed out and for them not to be able to move to prod or whatever it happens to be. So.
I think another part of that as well is it's not just what general availability mean. It means from our point of view that it's a supportable service and that we can can engage with customers who are working in production on that. And that means that the feature set we have included in there is solid and you can build on top of it. Mm. But it doesn't mean that it's a complete feature set. We've already talked a number of times about how innovative this space is and what changes are coming we don't know about, et cetera. And so we will be GA possibly in the first half of this year, certainly this calendar year, but will we have solved all of the problems that we have customers seeing? Things like networking is really problematic in the container space right now. Mm-hmm. Same with storage, et cetera. And you know, really, we need to talk about individual features. And I'll pick those two because those are the two that we do have. We want a really good solution in place soon. Because those are things customers hit a lot today.
That is certainly very topical, especially for me at the moment, with volume management and Docker seems to be, you know, the Achilles heel for many people on how to do it properly and well. And I think a service that can help customers with that would go a very long way. So those are the kinds of things that you're looking to I guess, help with over and above what Docker provides out of the box, and having to do things like, you know, have data-only containers with, you know, volumes that get shared between your containers. Is ACS looking at doing work in that space to say, hey, look, like we can do some abstractions here that help with things like volume management, much like Flocker, I guess, does in the more pure Docker sense?
Yeah, so the answer is a yes and no, and it really depends on how you interpret the question. The answer is yes if the question is constrained by doing those things within the open source community. Remember, I said everything we do needs to be conformant with what the open source community is doing, what the APIs within those open source software projects look like.
I see.
The answer is no if the question is really, are Microsoft going to do some proprietary stuff that's going to solve those problems? That's not our goal here. Our goal is to make sure that we contribute upstream, and we bring anything that we can bring to the table to improve the ecosystem as a whole. And that goes back to the why are we doing this, the solid infrastructure on which people can build full-blown applications, additional management layers, whatever they need to do. So, yeah, you do see us in the communities. You do see us working directly with, in the case of storage, for example, we're building plugins for the new plugin model for volumes that do Azure File Service, for example, and items like that. But always within the open source communities is the key thing that I want to get across.
No, that's great. That's really great. So where do people get started? What are some resources or some places that you think that our listeners that are interested in getting started with this and with Docker in general, I guess, that you'd point people to? I mean, obviously, you talk to customers and developers all over the world regularly. What are some of the easy ways for them to get started with ACS and with Docker and to get up and running on Azure and play, you know, kick the tires and play around?
So do you publish show notes alongside your podcast?
We publish links into a Flipboard magazine that we have, cool. so we can certainly push things there.
Yeah, I'll make sure you get a bunch of links from me, but if in case people don't find those, the starting point would be if you go to the Azure.com website. You can find Container Service. We're a top-level service in there, so you'll find that there. If you're familiar with ARM and ARM Quick Start Gallery on GitHub, you will find some 101 templates over there with some complete walkthroughs about how to stand up the cluster and how to deploy your first workloads there. And they link out to various different documents. If you're not familiar with Docker, they link out to there. You can look at our Channel 9 thing over at Microsoft. I've done a lot of Channel 9 shows about how to, from 101 Docker stuff, how do you actually run a Docker container, even as simple as that, all the way through to some in-depth stuff. I just this afternoon, just before this call, did one about how do you scale Docker applications. So starting to get deeper into the more production-like environments. So I'll send you a bunch of links and or start with the Azure.com documentation with the Container Service homepage.
Yeah, we'll certainly publish those to Flipboard for our users and link off to them so people can find those. I know that some Channel 9 videos with you in it that I looked at a wee while back, we'll also link off to those as well. I assume you're going to build to talk about this stuff?
I am.
Potentially?
Yes, I just got confirmation today that I got my slot on the program. So, yes, I'll be at Build.
Oh, you got a ticket. That's great, because it's very tough to get tickets to that conference.
The only way I can go is to be a speaker. I've got to work to get in there.
I'm glad they left a few tickets for speakers, so that's great. It was a mad scramble for I don't know if you saw how they're as rare as hen's teeth, it turns out. So
glad to hear you go. I've been to Build once before, and it was an eye opener.
I bet. No, that's great. So I guess as we wrap up, I guess I'll ask you a question about, you know, are there things you think our audience should know about that we haven't covered that you've been waiting for me to ask about, or a question about that you think we've missed, or that you think our audience would definitely not want to miss?
No, I think you've covered all the angles really well. The key thing I wanted to get across is the fact that we are building this framework, this infrastructure on which people can build full-blown Dockerized applications. And I think probably that the one piece that may not have come across in all that is we're in preview. And that means that I have got my ears open constantly. And for two things, one is what do partners need from us in order to build solutions that they can generate revenue from, and also what do customers who want to run workloads, what do they need? So my ears are open, and I'd be very happy for you to share my Twitter handle, which is how we got together in the first place. So by all means, please share that my Twitter handle. For those listening, it's at R Gardler. That's R-G-A-R-D-L-E-R. And if you follow me and DM me, I'll send you my email address, although search the web, you'll probably find my email address anyway.
Excellent. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed the chat, Ross. We really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about, you know, Docker and Azure Container Service in more detail. And we will certainly be keeping our ear to the ground with news from you and your peers and so forth on ACS. And we'll I'll be at Build and come along to your talks and learn more about ACS as it gets closer to GA. And I hope to take a dependency on it one day and I can run our apps on it. So I really appreciate you coming on.
I want to know why.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we'll fix it, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll certainly be trying it out, that's for sure, and trying to get what we've currently got running up and running there. So it'll be a learning exercise for us, but very much looking forward to it. So yeah, I think I say on behalf of both of AC and I, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and we look forward to seeing how ACS develops in the future. And hopefully we'll get to talk again soon around GA time, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share some thoughts.
No problem. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.